I have to read this speaker statement. I'm Brenda Manatic. The NA member chosen to speak at meetings need to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group experience in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distance to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, I'm Brenda. I'm an addict. Whew, and I'm nervous. I have to say that. I do like to thank the convention for asking me to come down and share. My home group is Hope Fiends at PG Hospital. And I just have to tell you, you know, when I came to this program over 15 years ago, I had no idea that my life would change the way that it has. I was in a meeting earlier, and this girl was talking about, the topic was living with someone, thank you, son, without a program. Let me back up. Took 6 detoxes and 3 rehabs before I finally surrendered. Both of my children were born addicted. That's my son right there. And this is his first convention, and he's like, Mom, what are they going to do here? I said, I'm here to get some recovery, you know. And you're going to have fun, and you know what mommy does and how my life has changed because of this program. It's only through the grace of God, only through the grace of God. You know, I don't have to go into no drug law because, like it says here, we all know how to use. But staying in this program once I got here was difficult because a lot of the emotions, a lot of my feelings were all over the place, and I had no idea what to do with them. I do know that when I went to that Mountain Manor Treatment Center, there was a pond out there, and I used to walk it, and I used to just pray. And I asked God, just help me stay here, because I'm known for running, and I'm known for leaving a treatment center. And it was like, just help me, you know, let me get through this. Just please, Lord, just help me, you know. And they told me that I would have to start talking about myself, and I ain't really like that. You know, I could talk about other people, but I didn't like talking about me. So when I got up there, I had to drop it, you know, about my children being born addicted. I had to drop it about all the stuff that I had done, stole, you know, the whole 9 yards. And so when I came to a meeting, it was like, okay, I don't have to share that no more. They already know, you know, but it didn't work like that, you know. I had to come in and I had to start talking about myself. Whew. Through a sponsor, I've done some steps, you know. Let me see, what can I say? Dang on. Some things in my life have changed since I've been here, I have to tell you that. A lot of the relationships that I screwed up, from my mom to my children, husbands, or whatever, you know, have slowly been repaired or whatever, because that's what happens when you become a productive member in society. You know, you get jobs and you become responsible. A lot of the dreams that I used to smoke up, you know, I'm going to get a house one day, I'm going to have a car, a nice job, you know. Money going in one hand, coming out the other, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to be a good mom, I'm going to be a good daughter and all of that stuff, you know, because of this program, I'm doing it today. You know, one of the other dreams that I had was to get married. You know, my first marriage, his dad didn't work out because when I was in that meeting and he was talking about being with somebody not having a program, that was me at first, you know, creating all the chaos, you know. And then he got tired of me, and he left me, bottom line, you know. And so I began to pray, and I was just asking God, you know, bring me somebody else, you know. I want to do this. I want to be married. I want to be happy, this and that and the other. And I didn't know he was going to bring me back because he brought me back, you know. And what I mean by that, y'all, I know I'm jumping. I just have to talk about where I'm at today, you know. Recovering from the waist up. I've been married for the last going on 10 years, and then since I've been in this program, you know what I'm saying, some things have changed, like I was talking about earlier, you know, going to meetings, working on myself, doing what I need to do, get involved, and they tell us not to get involved in relationships. We do that anyway. Okay, how much clean time you got, you get tired of being lonely, you know. So I got married, and one night my husband decided not to come home. And what I did, because in my first marriage, I was fooling around. I was doing all the other stuff that I shouldn't have done. I came into this room sleeping around and, you know, eating and doing everything. People, places, and things, that was me. So when that marriage ended and I was on my knees praying to God, it was one of my crossroads at about 5 years. I was telling God, bring me somebody new. I know I can do this, this and that and the other. And, so I got married again. But this time he brought me another suffering addict, you know, that's in the program. And I'm thinking we're going to be all right. You know, on my wedding anniversary, he decides that he wasn't going to come home, and all hell broke loose for me. Because when I got married in 89, wasn't it 89? 98. Whatever, whatever it was. Just been screwed up here. I hadn't fooled around. You know what I'm saying? I had stopped all of that because the inside, my character and all of that wasn't feeling too good. And I used to hear that in the rooms that you're going to get to that point where you don't want to do those things anymore. They're not going to make you feel good, you know. And then there's this time about getting the foundation. There's time about, you know, the higher power, and he's the one that's going to have to comfort you and carry you through. So I'm like, okay, you know, I did that. Now I'm ready to go on with this relationship. Well, anyway, when my husband did what he did, and see, my character is I'm vindictive. I'm going to come back at you some kind of way, you know. And so when he did that, I forgot all about my commitment, my vow that I made to God. You know, I forgot about all of that. And I just said, forget it. He want to do his thing. I'm going to do mine. I got you, you know. So I proceeded to go out and sleep around. And let me tell you something. All the way up until August of last year, I'm talking about the inside, y'all. I'm talking about all screwed up, all fucked up. You know, I'm crying, uncomfortable, like, why I do this? Almost like when you would be getting high, you know, and you don't want to take that hit, but you take it anyway. You know, you wake up in the bed, and you done got drunk the night before, and you're trying to figure out who bed you in. You know, all those uncomfortable feelings were right there, and I wasn't using no drugs, but that sleeping around stuff wasn't, you know. And I ended up hurting me. You know what I'm saying? Wasn't recovering, wasn't doing nothing, you know, just chilling, but trying to, you know, because they say keep coming back and more be revealed. I kept coming and I kept coming and I'm still coming. The difference now is I haven't fooled around since last August. But let me tell you something. Don't think that whatever trials and stuff that, you know, that I go through in my relationship, because that's what it is. I found out all relationships cause me to act crazy and do stupid stuff that I do know. If I'm not in a relationship, I'm all right. But when I get in a relationship, you know what I'm saying? That's when my program, it's either going to go on hold, you know, or even I'm going to do some footwork. And I heard, you know, the guy talking about pain. And more pain ain't nothing but a motivator. And me and my husband, we're still together. You know, he's still doing what he's doing. You know, and I've been with this man going on 12 years. You know, and it's kind of like, you know, I just don't understand. But I do, you know, because I was struggling with where do I set the boundaries, you know, When do I start pulling back? You know, when do I stop being enabling him? You know, the whole nine yards. But then I struggle, too, with the program because it's like if another suffering addict, you know, I got to be there. You know, and what do I do? You know, talk about being lost. Talk about not sure of what to do, you know. And that lady, when she was sharing, you know, she still loved this man, you know. Can't nobody tell you how to be or how, you know, how to do this thing. They can't, you know. I do know that the old me that like older men, that like money, like women, like whatever you got that's going to make me feel good. If right now, this last 8 months, because I haven't been, and it's kind of like sometimes it comes up like a puke that I want to go and do something. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and sleep around. I want to go do a payback. You know, I want to go in the store and steal. You know what I'm saying? And not getting any sleep at night, you know what I'm saying? Worrying about this addict, you know, So when they was talking about recovery from the waist up, I'm like, what the hell is that? You know, and then I had to make a few phone calls, you know, and they said, Brenda, talk about what you haven't been doing for the last 8 months. And, boy, I'm going to tell you what I have been doing. That's talking with my sponsor, that's going to meetings, that's bonding with the women in the program, that's telling them I feel like I want to go out and do something crazy, that's reaching out, you know, that's traveling with my daughter, you know, I haven't allowed myself to be like by myself too much, you know, I have my son with me this weekend, because trust me, I'm going to tell you, I had it all set up, I was coming down here to get done, my husband ain't nowhere near me, I mean, around, and the deal was that he was supposed to come with me, but because he does what he does, quote unquote, his thing is, I don't want no questions, I don't want nobody asking me nothing, and I'm like, okay, that's cool, you stay your ass in the room, I don't really care, I know what I'm down here for, you know, and because he went out and did what he did, of course, that played it up for me, because I'm like, now I know you ain't going with me, you know, and I forgot all about that, this could be the meeting or the place where he could actually get some help, but I came down here like, okay, you don't know, Mama Lou's damn room by myself too, you don't know. But I bought my son, you know, and so it's him and I in this room together. You know, what I do know now is I can feel when it tries to happen. You know what I'm saying? Because my insides are all screwed up. I have to tell you that. You know, they are just out of the whack and have been, like I said, for about 8 years. You know, this lady was talking about doing this for 2 years with this guy. I'm talking about 8 years, y'all. You know, now I hear a whole bunch of people saying, you know, Brenda, you need to leave him alone, you need to leave him alone, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do the other, but I ain't make that vow to none of y'all. I made that vow to God. And I know, you know, I know, because it was another guy that shared that he was the one, you know what I'm saying, and he commended the lady for hanging in there, because he said if it hadn't been for my wife, he ain't know where he would have been, you know, and that was some hope for me, you know what I'm saying? That was some hope for me. I tried to, like, call myself, go move on, move out, and this and that and the other, and get involved in something else. And my family was like, who that nigga, he need to go? You know, and I'm like, excuse me? They weren't no parts of it. You know, all they know is me and my husband. They wasn't, you know, wasn't having that. And then a lot of people that I've talked to, that, you know, spiritual people that I say that are married, working on their relationships, because that's the advice that I got, was to go to people who are working on relationships, who are married or whatever, and talk to them. And none of them said leave. Nobody said leave. It's only been the people that have suggested me to do that to either have an ulterior motive, or they ain't in a relationship, or they ain't been committed. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, and of course me, when the addict in between these two ears, I'm going over here to the left side. And then when I go over there, then I end up finding myself, why I do that? You know, one more time, you know. And it ain't been easy. So when they was talking, when my sponsor was saying, Brenda, just share about what you ain't been doing, I'm like, well, I ain't been fucking. That's it. You know, nobody. You know, and, you know, the D watching, the P watching, for y'all don't know, the dick watching, the pussy watching, you know, stirring at the crotches. I mean, I'm just telling you that this is all of the stuff that I identify with myself that be going on when I'm trying to stay straight, you know, trying to stay on the right side. You know, I go all over the place. It don't have to be, it can be anything. And my mind goes to go right there. You know, and then my sponsor said, and it's a man, he's on his way down here tomorrow. And don't trust me, the thought was to take him to bed too, you know. But thank God for me being able to share with him what's going on with me. Thank God for him being honest, willing to help me, you know, with no strings attached. I am grateful for that, you know. But I was telling him that I have to find a female sponsor, you know, because he don't know about women. He only know about men. And that was my purpose, was trying to get him to explain some things to me so I could understand what was going on, why was he feeling this way, my husband, blah, 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 blah. And so he was like, that's cool, but you're going to keep me too. And I'm like, okay, I don't have a problem with that. Because, you know, I'm not going to shut out my help today. I do know that when, you know, that six step talks about, you know, them character defects and whatever. Man, I'm telling you. Only thing I know is that I'm grateful for this convention because I look forward to it. You know, I look forward to coming to meetings. I look forward to getting these hugs. I look forward to seeing people I haven't seen in a long time. I look forward to hearing other people speak so I can identify. But when that lady got up there and shared today, I thought I was the only freaking one. You know, the only one that was dealing with somebody. You know, all other areas of my life, trust me, you know, I got a job, I'm working there. And I can't really say, you know, that my husband hasn't been here for me because I'm the one that don't like to work. And if let him tell him, he could tell you some shit about me too now. You know, because there's always two sides to every story. All y'all hear me share about what? About him. You know, I give you a little bit about me. You know what I'm saying? We ain't got enough time for me to go on all of it, you know. But they didn't tell me that it was going to be easy when I got here. Then nobody told me what kind of walk or journey I was going to take, you know, or how I was going to be able to stand or if I was going to fall in it. You know, only thing they said was if you follow our simple suggestions, and we can promise you a life of freedom from active addiction. They ain't say nothing about life, children, husbands, wives, jobs, you know, sex. They ain't say none of that, even though there's a program for that. But they never said anything about that. You know, nobody said that. You know, they just said some simple suggestions. You know, I'm a thief. I said that earlier. What I haven't been doing is taking my husband's money and spending it. I was sharing with my sponsor on the phone that when we sold our house, you know, he was scratching, digging, and nodding. And so when he went out, I took that opportunity to slide my check over there and tell him, put the money in this account right here. Because his name ain't on it, you know. And it wasn't that I did not, you know, I wasn't thinking about him. I was trying to think about me, you know, and our livelihood. Left up to him, we won't have no place to live. Because that's just how the stuff take you. We know, come on, you ain't paying no bills. You're going to make all them promises and you ain't going to keep them. So I have to look out for us. And it ain't, no, and my sponsor was like, Brittany, you being selfish. I said, no, I'm taking care of us. You know what I'm saying? I have to take care of us. You know, I'm not taking his money and buying shoes and gold and all that kind of stuff. We ain't got no bills. Cars are paid for. You know what I'm saying? All we have is rent and utilities to pay. You know, and I work. I don't have to. Well, yeah, I do. But, you know, I'm just saying, I work because I need my own, you know, and I need to be able to have his back when his paycheck is short. You see what I'm saying? But I have to do what I got to do to take care of us because he can't carry us. And he's supposed to be the man. He's supposed to be the one that is the head of the household. Then me. I know what my role is. You know, and I know where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing. But somebody got to do it. If he ain't, you know what I'm saying? Then he gets mad when I make decisions, you know, because I'm like, well, you ain't around. You be gone for 2 or 3 days. Then you will come to the house and go, what's this? Where'd that come from? Excuse me? You know what I'm saying? I moved the money so because you can't touch it. I have to. You know what I'm saying? You run into the ATM. You know how we do 20, 20, 20 all night long. Instead of getting the shit in one lump sum, you know, he going to penny pinch it all night, you know. And then I'm looking at the bank account. What's going on? And then you want to lie. I ain't been nowhere. You know? Yes, you have. Yes, you have. So I had to do. I got to do what I have to do to take care of us. And I was telling my sponsor, if he need tires on his truck, I might fuss because he's running the rubber off, going wherever. But it's like, I will meet you wherever you need to meet me at, you know, to make sure that he has new tires on his truck if that's what he needs, you know. I'm not going to let him be without, you know. He never let me, you know. As far as the relationship part and that stuff that women need, I don't get that. But everything else I do get from my husband. You know, he's not abusive. He's not, you know, cussing me out, calling me no names. His ass would have been dead if he did, because I done had enough ass whippings, you know. But he's not like that. He's just caught up in the grip of that thing. You know, and a lot of promises and shit he made, he can't keep them, you know. And that's not to say that I could go out here and get involved with somebody else. And then what they going to do? If it could be me. It could be me out here, you know, go out and relapse. What, you going to leave me now? You know? So I don't know, y'all. I don't know. He told me, he said, Brenda, that was it when I came down here to this convention, that I'm not, you know, I'm not doing this thing no more. And I'm like, well, Kevin, I really don't, I can't worry about all that. All I know is we got a roof over our head. The bills are paid. You get your little $150. That's $600 or $700 a month that nigga get. That ain't out the paycheck. You know what I'm saying? And you choose to blow it up and smoke it up or whatever, then that's on you. But you need to look at the blessing that God keep giving you every day. You gonna go out there one time, your heart gonna explode. You know, something gonna happen to you. And, well, I ain't gonna do it no more. You gonna be an OG with your pants down here, 90 years old, with gold around your neck, thinking you still got it going on. And the only one gonna be sitting up there looking at your stupid ass is me. Okay, anybody gonna want you? Shh, man. I don't know. I do know that, it's only through the grace of God that I stay here. And he did tell me this. How much time do I got before I got to stop? He told me, Brenda, don't do what I'm doing. Hold on to your recovery. Hold on to it and don't let it go. And because a couple times I felt like, I have to be honest and tell you, this nigga can get shit and don't lose it. Every time I got high, I lost everything. Everything. You know, wasn't no home, no woman, husband waiting for me when I got home. Wasn't none of that shit there. You know, he just gets a woman, house, cars, job. He ain't lost shit. To me, you ain't hit no bottom. You need to hit a serious one. Somebody need to go. You know, and then they were sharing in that meeting, and they was talking about when a woman's had enough. He has until August of 2007. Then I got to make a serious decision. When we sold our house, y'all, and this is where the recovery for me head up, come back in. I had an opportunity then to go, but I didn't. And I heard a lot of people talking about, well, Brenda, you doing this, you doing that. Why don't you sit still, get a man a chance. Men have a real problem with a woman doing stuff to them. But when a man does it, it's supposed to be okay. And, you ain't got no business out there messing around on that man. These are the guys, blah, blah, blah. But they got different women floating 100 miles an hour. I'm like, okay. So now that I'm doing it, I'm wrong. I'm this hoe. I'm this and that. I'm that. And yeah, but okay, it's fine. So when we sold that house, we signed another lease. And this time, I'm sitting still. Because I want to see. You know, my prayer has been that, God, if this is meant to be, if I sit still, you know what I'm saying? At least I'll be able to see some things I didn't see before. Because I can't see if I'm running the street just as well as he is. You know, so that's the time frame that I gave myself to be able to finally make a decision in 2007. And it's going to be a hard one because for the last 11 years, 12 years, that's all I've been talking about is me and my husband, me and my husband. I don't come over here sharing about my sons out here selling drugs and nothing like that because they're not. They in the meetings and the program. They know about it just like, you know, hey. But that relationship thing with my husband has been the only thing that has been whipping me mentally, you know. But I'm still here, you know. I'm not going anywhere. I'm keeping my pants up. Keeping my skirt down, you know. And because I do have children that are watching me, you know, and they know how I live. You know, my son heard the lady in the meeting say she gone. He said, "Mom, you ain't left yet?" You know, and I understand that because he tired of it too. You know, and I was explaining to him, I just, one day at a time, August will be here before I know it. Then I got a decision to make. Then you're going to hear me coming up in here crying and whining about that. You know, but the blessing is I can be able to come up in here and whine about it until I get through it, you know, and be by myself, you know, and do what I need to do for me and my son and my daughter, you know. And it ain't easy, you know, it's not easy. I just know that the next time around, God, whatever happens, I will not get involved with anybody that's using. That I will not do. I have learned my lesson. You know, you ain't got to be in the program, but you ain't going to be doing no drugs. I'm sorry. We can't have that. But anyway, for anybody that has gotten anything out of this, if you knew, I don't suggest you do none of the stuff you heard me doing, but just don't use. Keep going to meetings. Keep coming back. Get a sponsor. Work them steps. You know what I'm saying? Above all, don't be afraid to come into these rooms and tell about what your stinking ass is out there really doing. Because honesty is the key, you know. And if you can't learn to be honest, you ain't going to get this thing, you know. And build that foundation, because when the rocky roads come and you by yourself and you can't get a hold of that sponsor and you can't get a hold of none of your networks, then who you going to call on? You know what I'm saying? That's where you and that higher power come in at. You know, and he don't give me no more than I can handle him. But and the thing is, he hasn't told me to move yet either. So what do you do? I'm listening to other people. I'm still waiting on God. He ain't told me to leave that man yet. But I got to go through all this. But then I got to remember, why not? I put somebody else through it. Thanks for letting me share.
Now, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Philip O.
I need this, right? Yes. I'm an addict. My name's Phil.
Hey, Phil.
From New York City. Speaker statement. Yeah. And the NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who's working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there's not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there's a possibility the group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand the NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic tech, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. Mm-hmm. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts. Recovering from the disease of addiction is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope in recovery. My name is Phil. I am an addict. And I'm a proud member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm from New York City, and it's an honor and a privilege to be invited down to Ocean City, Maryland, to share my experience, strength, and hope on this topic, recovering from the waist up. Recovering from the waist up. Now, that's not in the literature, but we all know what it means, don't we? I mean, some things, before they get in the literature, get used, and people relate to them, and later on, literature catches up. I mean, recovering from the waist up means that most of us out there busy doing drugs didn't get around to having much sex, and most of us come into recovery and we go wild. We recover from the waist down. That's what this topic seems, and then that's what this topic seems to say, right? Well, that was not my story. I'm here because I had a major problem with drugs, but I couldn't live and enjoy life like other people do. I had to have something different, and I thought I had found it in sex. I came down to Maryland to share a part of my story that I usually gloss over or leave out, but with a topic like this, you got me pinned. So I guess it's time to let you know about that part of my story. This is while I was active, as my disease was progressing, for the decades it was progressing, because I got here at 51. Obsession was all day. Obsession. Using drugs, but obsessing about sex. Third step, it says, we were always on the lookout. We couldn't just let events happen. I was always on the lookout. And that's exhausting. I mean, anyone who came into contact with me was in danger. I was in compulsion at night. Compulsion.
That's right.
I was staying up late on weeknights, going to clubs, hoping to meet someone. Closing time, anyone who was left would do. And I was self-centered all the time. Obsessive, compulsion, self-centered. I was in the disease of sex. Now, drugs were part of it. Drugs were a key part of it, actually. They were there to intensify the sensations. And also to work as bait. Oh, I wasn't the only one. Oh, in those old movies, they used to have the bachelor say things like, "Come up and see my etchings." Well, for me it was, I have some drugs in my apartment. Why don't you come over? And after that, it was all implied and included. It was part of the bait. Now, in the 70s in New York City, there were orgy clubs. I mean, it was wide open. Orgy clubs. They started about 2 a.m. They opened, and you could bring a partner and never see your partner the whole rest of the evening. You just float around. I went to orgy clubs. Before there were chat rooms, ladies, boys and girls, before there were chat rooms, there were personal ads. Personal ads where people misrepresented themselves in describing themselves. And I both ran some ads and answered a whole lot of personal ads. Now, the sex was real impersonal. I mean, I don't remember people's names. It was to do it and to never see you again. No. I mean, people were disposable. I mean, we used people. I used a lot of people. I didn't care about you. I told you anything. Anything. I was spiritually bankrupt. There's a name for that. I didn't care. I would tell you stuff and, you know, and then I wouldn't see you and, you know, disposable. Now, as both of my diseases progressed, at the end, I had to get more creative. Came to Maryland to not gloss over some part of my story that I've never told, you know. At the end, I came up with a brilliant idea, because we're very creative people. When we want to get what we want, we are very creative people. and I created a fictitious business that I supposedly had. And I ran ads, and it was a ploy. It was a ploy to meet a whole bunch of other people. And the name of this imaginary business was Party Starters. Now, Party Starters, this was my rap. We send couples to parties, and they mix and mingle with your guests, if you're hiring Party Starters service. They mix and mingle with your guests, and at some point, very spontaneously, they rip off their clothes and do it right there in front of everybody and get everyone else in the mood. Would you like our services? And in order to get a staff, a roster, I ran ads saying this is what this business was. It wasn't any business, right? This was all made up. But when I ran ads, people were hungry to believe it. And they would come in for an interview, because it had to be an interview, and audition. And audition. I saw a lot of stuff. Another thing I would do is in meeting people, I would misrepresent myself by telling you that I had another business that didn't exist, which was, and I used another name, and I'm an agent for models. That's what I do. And you have a wonderful look. And you have a career ahead of you. And you can make a lot of money, and it's very glamorous. Oh, you have a good look. Here's my card. That card's printed for this imaginary business. And call me. We'll make an appointment. They call. They come in for the interview. And, of course, I would tell them, you know how the modeling business is. You know how it is. You know, you have to sleep with people to get ahead. And I need to know if you're flexible in that way. And if they claimed they were, I would say, show me now. Now, all the time, all through all of this, I feel no remorse. I'm using people, promising things I can't deliver. I don't give a damn. I am, like the literature says, we were proud of our bizarre behavior. I was proud. I was happy to get over. I thought I got a rush just from that I could be so smart and so slick that I could outsmart people out of their sex. This is who I was before I got here. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And I'd like to tell you that I immediately got spiritual and didn't do that anymore. But that isn't quite how it happened. What happened was I recognized that in this setting, people were not going to be disposable. I was going to have to see them again. And the prospect of that made me reluctant to do my usual thing. People were not disposable, and also I had a fear of repercussions. It was bad enough that one of the first times I stood in front of a meeting and shared from this side of the table, I remember looking out, horrified to see two faces of models, of potential models that I had misled. Maybe they didn't remember me, but for whatever reason, they never embarrassed me or confronted me about it. But that was enough of a scary experience to have this fear of repercussions. Also, the reason I didn't act out in those early days was the hugs. The hugs were so great. It occurred to me that I had settled for sex when I really wanted hugs. And my priority because I really loved Narcotics Anonymous. It really, I felt like finally, this Indian found his tribe, finally a group of people that are more like me than any other group of people. And my priority was to become part of. And yeah, there was a driven quality to that, the way I did service, the way I would run around and meet new people. There was like a driven quality to that, but compulsion can be channeled. And because I had a different priority, I was able to put that other behavior on the side. So for the first period of my recovery, I didn't have sex. Transformation from active. And then I had a series of experiences that allowed me to distance myself from the last time I used. I had the experience of sharing who I was, some real things about me, and people loved me for who I was. I didn't have to misrepresent myself. I didn't have to manipulate and force a situation. I wasn't using people. I just had to be me, and I got these wonderful warm vibes, and that helped me distance. I had experience with the therapeutic value, those times when we feel bad and we were told, share with someone, just talk about what's making you feel bad, and what will happen more than likely is you'll feel better after sharing about it. Well, at the beginning, like most of us, it seemed utterly fantastic. How can that be? But the first time I tried it, it worked. And the next time I tried it, it worked. I was pulling people over and calling people up and telling people what I was going through. And they never wanted anything from me. They never... It was unconditional. And it gave me a whole other way to look at things, that interactions with people didn't have to be about what I wanted and what I was driven to get, that I would do anything to accomplish. People were just giving me their attention and their caring and their good vibes, and they wanted nothing back. I began to appreciate what I now call quality private time. Quality private time, to be back in my apartment in the evening and feel comfortable just being there, puttering around, doing what I needed to do, that I didn't have to go out. I didn't have to seek and hunt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quality private time. You know, we say that an addict alone is in bad company. I beg to differ. One of the goals of this program is to be comfortable with some private time. An addict alone is not in bad company. At the beginning, we suggest that you include us in every thought and most of your activities. But as we move along, one of the goals is to be comfortable in our own skin. And as I kept coming and progressed, my ideas of fun changed, like it says, and more will be revealed. I began to get joy in things that I never noticed. I would walk down the street and see a florist and see some flowers and just be struck, just stop in my tracks that they're so beautiful. I would see trees silhouetted against the sky, and I would, oh, birds singing. These things gave me joy, not the other things. I went back to going to museums like I did as a young man and enjoy a whole day at the museum. This was constructive behavior, not destructive behavior. I took up swimming. As an elderly gentleman, I took up a brand new thing. I took swimming lessons, and I love swimming. Ideas of fun changed. And, of course, what changed me the most was a little thing called step work. Step work. Yes, transforms us. I remember in the fourth step I wrote about these activities that I told you about, and I remember getting in touch with the fact that I was trying so hard to get over, to get something sexually, that it really amounted to a form of begging. It was like, please. And that was jarring to be in touch with that. When I shared it, when I shared my fourth step with my sponsor in the fifth step, he called my activities back then a kind of ritual. A ritual based on a fantasy, a ritual going through the motions over and over and over, endless loops leading nowhere. A ritual. In the sixth step, I got in touch with defects like selfishness. Selfishness, needing to get mine, never mind what, never mind how you felt about it, never mind that I gave you the wrong phone number, never mind that when you called, I couldn't pick up the, never mind how you felt. I got to get mine. Selfishness as a character defect, the very thing of the manipulation that was in my face, that was so obvious, even I could see that. The insensitivity, I don't care if you got your feelings hurt. I don't care if you think, if I promised you something and I didn't, yeah, I don't care. Insensitive to your feelings. Only my feelings are important. And the recklessness, because some of those situations I told you about led to predicaments. I mean, it's a predicament when you invite someone into your apartment and after you're done doing what you're doing, they don't want to leave. Recklessness is recognizing consequences ahead of time. So in the sixth step, I got in touch with these defects being with me in the present in a different form, but they're part of me. And in the seventh step, I got to practice the spiritual opposite of defects. I got to practice it. I got to practice surrender in place of willfulness. Surrender. When my home group wants to do something and I raise my hand and speak against it and say it's a bad idea and they still want to do it, surrender. Surrender. Not insist. Didn't have to be my way. I practiced that. And surrender became more natural. And willfulness was removed. I practiced integrity in place of dishonesty. When I got extra change, I gave it back. When someone came to me with stuff and asked what I thought, I didn't just co-sign it in order for them to like me. Integrity in place of dishonesty. I practiced generosity in place of greed. Generosity. With my time, I spend lots of time on the phone with people. I'm there at the end of the serenity prayer at the end of the meeting. I don't just dash out of the meeting. I'm there for as long as it takes for us to talk through whatever you're going through. This is what most important thing I'm doing. So I can be generous, and I realize that something was happening by the end of the seventh step. Something happens. Works How and Why says something happens. I love it when they use that expression for how the program works. We have all these books that explain how it works, and really the best we can do, because we don't fully understand it, is something happens. Something happens when we practice the steps and learn to apply principles in our individual lives. We develop an awareness of our behavior and its effects on ourselves and other words. In other words, we develop a conscience. Seven steps later, I had developed a conscience, and I needed to go on with the steps and put those nameless people on my eight-step list. Mm-hmm. Whole category, because I couldn't remember which or what. Nameless people, and be clear about the harm I had done, and as we do in the eighth and ninth step, make a commitment to not repeat those behaviors. A commitment to not repeat those behaviors. I had to put myself on my eight-step list because we degraded ourselves in our own eyes. What I was doing was lowering my already low self-esteem. Running around frantic. It had to happen. I couldn't sleep. Went to work with no sleep. I had to happen, driven. I was hurting myself. I needed to put myself on my 9-step list. In my 10-step, I learned to check my motives all the time. All the time. When I'm in a meeting, before I raise my hand, I ask Phil, what's your real reason for raising your hand? Do you want to help carry the message, or do you want to share something you're going through that you can get help for, or do you just want to shoot your mouth off? Show the group all that you know. And if it's the latter, I keep my hand down. I check my motives in all areas of my life. And therefore, I am changing. I'm changing. I had just had the motive I had, and get out of my way, here I come. The 11th step says that when we finally get our selfish motives out of the way, we begin to find a peace we never imagined before. By the 11th step, I was no longer always on the lookout. No longer had to be exhausted, the wheels always turning, looking around, looking for my next Vic. I learned that word here. That was a lot of work, and by the 11th step, I have peace. I no longer need to do that. And in the 12th step, practicing spiritual principles leads us to a new image of ourself. We had a track record. We all had a track record. Talks about it in Who is an Addict. Whatever your track record is, it doesn't have to be your track record now. In Narcotics Anonymous, we get a brand new track record. But we have to practice being different. Then it's our new track record. I have a new track record today. I have a new self-image today. It says we redefine ourselves. The definition of who Phil is at 14 years and a few months clean is not the same as the definition of Phil in January 92 when I got here. So I have this rising self-esteem, and I know that I deserve more than just ritual and fantasy. I know I deserve more. So I have resolved to wait for my soulmate, for the special one, and not to run around and have sex where it isn't the person who I want to be with. Now, I'd like to tell you that I found the person. And then I'm having a lot of sex now. Recovering from the waist up, right? I'd like to tell you that, but in fact, I haven't had sex in years. I'll let that settle a little bit. Because sometimes when I say that, people look at me like I'm from Mars or something. I haven't had sex in years, and I'm all right. New people just came in and heard me say that. Yeah, it's that meeting. No, I'm okay with that. You do not die of lack of sex. It's just my priorities are different. Now, sometimes, for a moment, I get a thought. Look, don't you sometimes, at a moment, get a thought of using drugs? Yeah. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. And what you do is you choose not to act on it. And it passes like that, unless you entertain it. So I get a thought once in a while, but it passes. So I have to share for you that I am so amazed and so impressed by the program of Narcotics Anonymous, because you have done something I truly did not believe was possible, couldn't be possible, impossible. I stand before you, a senior citizen, 65 years old, and I've actually become an old man without also becoming a dirty old man. Program works. March 29th, just for today. What worked for us when we used frequently doesn't work long in recovery. As we progress spiritually by working the 12 steps, we begin to develop new values and standards. We feel uncomfortable when we take advantage of situations that, when we used, would have left us gloating, proud of our bizarre behavior, about what we had gotten away with. So by recovering from the waist up, I have a gut that allows me to feel emotionally what you are going through, what we call empathy. Mm-hmm. By recovering from the waist up, I have two arms to give and receive hugs and unconditional love. The key word is unconditional. I have a mind. By recovering from the waist up, I have a mind that allows me to use the self-awareness you've given me. What a blessing to see myself coming. I have eyes and ears. By recovering from the waist up, I have eyes and ears to offer you, to be your eyes and ears, to help you. Who says it's a bad thing to take each other's inventory? It can be one of the most loving things we do, depending on how we use it. Because by recovering from the waist up, I have a heart that allows me the courage to trust the process and want more growth and even more change. Narcotics Anonymous, you've given me such a wonderful life. I'm recovering from the waist up. The old behavior is old behavior. And I love my life today. Mm-hmm. Yes, you do not just fade away when you don't have sex for long periods of time. I want to leave you with that. You can get actually to be okay with it. Now, I'm not talking about forever. I'm 65. I'm not dead yet. My name is Phil. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.